Welcome to Jaws of Justice Radio on 90.1 FM KKFI Kansas City Community Radio. It's Monday morning. My name is Jamie. On today's broadcast, host Melvin Merritt talks with Becca Burns-Spielman of the Lawrence Anti-Trafficking Task Force, an education association, LATTE, about their mission to raise the public's knowledge of the issue of human trafficking. In the second half of our broadcast, host Jessica Thomas talks with Kyle Middleton and his twin brother of the organization Native Hope about empowering Native people and raising awareness of trafficking through storytelling and art. Stay tuned for the calendar of events in the middle of the broadcast and the 420 drug war news at the end of the broadcast. Coming up is Melvin and his guest.
Good morning, Kansas City. You're in tune to
Jaws of Justice right here on KKFI 90.1. I'm your host, Melvin Merritt, and I'm waiting for my guest on the phone, and she's calling all the way from Lawrence, Kansas. And as the announcer made mention of, that she is part of the organization of LATTE, Lawrence Anti-Trafficking Task Force and Education Association, and it's a real interesting organization, and it was actually formed in 2014, and by these women that had wanted to at least found out about some things when they went to a meeting, and they wanted to know more information about this deal called sex trafficking. And it was no information around, so they decided that they were going to start something and make the community and the surrounding areas aware of what was happening right in Lawrence, Kansas, and also in Kansas and the entire Metroplex. So they formed this organization called LATTE, Lawrence Anti-Trafficking Task Force and Education Association. And I'm wondering, do I have my guests on the phone yet?
Good morning, Melvin.
Good morning. Good morning, Becca. How are you doing this morning?
Good. Thank you so much for the opportunity to talk with you this morning.
Sure. I have your website pulled up, and I wanted to ask, how did this organization, I kind of alluded to the fact about these women. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Absolutely. So in the latter part of 2013, there were several folks who we lovingly refer to as our founding mothers, mm-hmm. Who had attended this conference workshop, exactly what you had talked about, and mm-hmm. learned about human trafficking, domestic human trafficking, trafficking happening in our own country, in our own backyards. And so in January of 2014, which is around the same time that other organizations were starting to think about these ideas and what they could do to support trafficking, in January of 2014, that's when this organization, LATTE, was formed.
So when you talk about supporting this trafficking, what do you mean by that?
Sure. So trafficking really looks like a couple of different things, and these are not mutually exclusive categories by any means. But sex trafficking, what we're talking about, is when a person is induced into a sex act in exchange for anything of value through the means of force, fraud, and coercion. And so what I mean by that is anything of value could be money, but it could also be material possessions, food, shelter, and exchange of drug or alcohol, et cetera. And then if a person is under the age of 18, the really important distinction is that a commercial sex act in and of itself is sex trafficking, and we refer to that as the commercial sexual exploitation of a child. So anyone under the age of 18, force, fraud, and coercion does not need to be present for trafficking to occur. Likewise, labor trafficking, we're talking about when a person is induced into exploitive labor mm-hmm. under the means of force, fraud, and coercion.
That's a whole different ball game, so to speak. when they're forced into labor opposed to sex?
Yeah, we do see that there are a lot of overlaps, mm-hmm. A lot of situations in which folks who are being trafficked through commercial sex are also being trafficked through labor acts and vice versa. But yes, there are a lot of nuances that make those situations unique as well.
So when you were kind of defining this in terms of sex trafficking, and I'm old school, so the first thing I thought about is way back in the early 60s when they had guys that was called pimps. What is the difference and what is the fine line between what they were doing and what this sex trafficking is today? Would you be aware of that type of behavior, because it sounds so close, you know, mm-hmm. and then the reward is money, clothing, or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, whatever they do to award that person for their acts.
You're exactly right, Melvin. I think that there, it's a very fine line, and I'm not sure that I wouldn't say that those two things are connected. What I can say with certainty is the point at which it becomes a trafficking situation is, again, those three thresholds, one of which has to be met from a federal definition. So the concept of force. So if I am a pimp and I am using some type of physical restraint, physical harm, sexual assault, or confinement techniques mm-hmm. In order to keep that person under my control, sure. that would be considered that force threshold. Mm-hmm. If I'm making promises, false promises that I'm not keeping regarding their employment or their wages, working conditions, or whether or not they will have a better life under me, then I'm using fraudulent claims. And then if I'm coercing them in any way, if I'm including any serious threats to harm them or using psychological manipulation to keep them under my control, mm-hmm. or confiscating their documents, shaming them, threatening them or their family members, then that would fall under the threshold of coercion. Mm-hmm. So if I'm a pimp engaging in any of those activities, then with certainty that would fall under the definition of trafficking.
So, and with this trafficking, you know, when they're trafficking, do they take the individuals or person out of their area in order for that control to really be affected?
Sometimes. I would say that a common misconception that folks have is that there is some element of travel that is required for trafficking to occur. And here in the United States, that is not, in fact, the case. So it can happen, and we certainly do hear of survivors being trafficked across state lines mm-hmm. or even folks coming from other countries and being trafficked here in the States, but that does not have to happen in order to meet that federal definition
sure.
of trafficking.
Because that's the mm-hmm. first thing that I think about when you mention the mm-hmm. word trafficking and
right.
and transferring people from one area to another, and
right.
in most cases in locations that the individual is unaware of and doesn't know too many people, and that put them in a very vulnerable situation and put them in a more of a control situation.
Yeah. Yeah, isolation is definitely a technique that some, if not many, traffickers use in order to keep folks under their control, or like you said, in much more vulnerable states, for sure.
So with this organization, Latte, that then started in 2014, what effect are you having? I know that basically it's informing the community, the society, about what is taking place in Lawrence and various areas around Missouri. What effect are you making with this organization?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think, you know, above all else, community awareness and discourse around this issue mm-hmm. has been heightened. And I think that is incredibly powerful. To address the issue of trafficking, we have to first know what trafficking is, and we have to know what to look for. And so, you know, minimally we see an impact in educating more and more people and having more and more professionals reach out to us for additional presentations. One of the the things that we are really proud of, a project that we're working on right now, is in conjunction with the Children's Alliance of Kansas, which they do their foster care training for foster parents. And so we're working with them, collaborating with them to do a human trafficking multi-hour, potentially multi-part curriculum, so that foster parents know, one, what signs to look for, as well as, two, how to help a child who has been trafficked who is now in their home. And so those are really important things that, that we feel like should be communicated to foster parents throughout the state of Kansas. Another project that we're working on that we're really excited about is really enhancing our curriculum to be able to speak to vulnerable populations. So working in collaboration with other nonprofits in our community to present on topics related to human trafficking and individuals with disabilities, for example, or human trafficking and folks in rural communities. So recognizing that there are some unique vulnerabilities that certain populations may have, and what we can do to ensure that not only are we acknowledging those things, but we're collaborating as a community to address them together, which I think is a really powerful message.
I had two questions, but one of them, because you kind of struck up something in my mind, is have you been invited to speak on this issue in churches or organization like, what is the word, faith-based organizations?
Yeah, so one of the really unique things that I've noticed within the anti-trafficking field is that there are a number of faith-based communities who have wanted to address these things. And so that is a huge partnership that we continue to enhance. But yes, that is definitely an audience that not only do we like to present to, but who frequently request presentations from us. Absolutely.
That's great. You and I, we talked earlier, and I was saying, I mentioned to you about do the people that are being trafficking, do their peers used to get them into trafficking or being trafficked?
Yeah. So the conversation that you and I were having this morning, where we were talking about some of the methods that traffickers use to recruit their victims or survivors. And so you're absolutely right. There are circumstances in which traffickers will use recruiters, some of whom have never been trafficked a day in their life, potentially, but represent a more trusting population to the individual. So, for example, you know, a classmate or someone of similar age, or maybe even someone who can pose as a dating partner. There are also situations in which traffickers will use individuals who are currently being trafficked or who have been trafficked to then recruit more members. So this would be someone who the trafficker sees as a trusted individual within their crew, if you will, and therefore they ask for that person to go out. And that can be a really difficult thing for folks to navigate. One, to understand how someone who has been victimized would put someone else in a position like that.
Sure.
But two, these folks don't necessarily fit the quote-unquote mold of what a trafficker looks like, right? Like, I don't think about potentially a young woman, and we know trafficking happens to people of all gender identities, but I am going to be less likely, potentially, to think of this young woman as someone who may ultimately get me caught up in the life, as opposed to thinking of a trafficker in that example that you gave of what a traditional quote-unquote pimp looks like. So that can be confusing.
Sure. And we talked about as well the fine line between pedophiles and those that are looking for young girls to be trafficked. And how do you do that? You know, because you mentioned where an individual would drive around a school. And how do you define that person being a pedophile or not being a pedophile to a trafficker?
Yeah, I think that's a fine line as well, because you know, many of these traffickers may pose as a boyfriend or a girlfriend or a dating partner in some way. And so, you know, they...
So in other words, that person has to be around the same age that they're targeting. Is that what you're saying?
Well, in some cases, no. In some cases, the dating partner is much older. And so that's a real indicator for us and the situation that we were talking about, in which a much older person who was easily in their early 20s was circling a local middle school, you know, kind of, like you said, almost fishing, right, for an opportunity. And so... we definitely see that where, you know, men or women or folks who are non-binary in their early 20s dating someone who's 13, 14 years old. And obviously that's a huge indicator for us that there's something very serious going on, whether it's a sexual predator, someone who is preying on a child merely, and I don't mean that in any kind of degrading sense, but for a sexual relationship, or whether they are engaging in that in a relationship with that child for trafficking. Both are extremely heinous situations.
So what happens when you get this information about an individual that is trying to coerce a person into trafficking or being a victim of trafficking? What do you do? What's the next step that you make as an organization? Or do you inform another organization to do what you would like to do?
Right. So as you mentioned, we are really focused, Latte is really focused on community education and prevention education.
Mm-hmm.
And so our role is not to provide those advocacy supports. So we have a number of partnerships within our community in Lawrence. We work really closely with the Willow Domestic Violence Center and with the Sexual Trauma and Abuse Care Center and with the Youth Trust Project, all of which are organizations that provide direct service to survivors of trafficking. And so that's a really important thing, is that we, in collaboration with those entities, have created a flow chart so that if folks do get disclosures, which certainly could happen, then they have a clear path for different options that they can take with those survivors. Are you interested in shelter services? Great. We have an organization who can provide that to you.
Sure.
Those kinds of things. Mm-hmm.
Real quickly, what can you tell us about the statistics in terms of culture, you know, black, white, Hispanic? What is the rate of a young culture, ethnic group is the word I'm looking for, that are more trafficked or targeted opposed to another, if I'm making my point?
No, you absolutely are. So what we see on a national level is that folks who are vulnerable in other aspects of interpersonal violence absolutely applies to human trafficking. So if you are a member of a vulnerable or oppressed population group, there is a good chance that your group will be experiencing trafficking at higher rates. There's no question about that.
What group is that? What group?
So some really vulnerable groups are going to be children who are in foster care. That's a huge vulnerability. LGBTQA+. Population groups, so folks who are lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer questioning, asexual, agender, plus, those are also going to be folks that experience trafficking at much higher levels. Youth who have run away from home or folks who are living on the streets, who are homeless, are also at extremely higher rates, are trafficked at higher rates, much higher rates. And like you mentioned, folks that are members of, you know, racial or ethnic groups, for sure. A lot of folks who are members of immigrant populations, especially those who are undocumented or where English is not their first language, that is a group that a lot of traffickers will prey on because there are additional vulnerabilities around deportation and those things like that. Folks with disabilities, absolutely. I mean, the list really goes on.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, there are definite stats that speak to that.
Mm-hmm. And you know, you touched right on what I was thinking about, especially with mm-hmm. the immigrants that was incarcerated because, or at least the ones that were separated from their parents. And I was thinking about that makes those young children very vulnerable to pedophiles and possibly traffickers. I was just wondering, what were your thoughts about that?
Potentially, absolutely. I mean, anytime you have a minor who has gone through some extremely traumatic circumstances, mm-hmm. That vulnerability increases substantially. It is a definite possibility. In fact, there are documentaries that have been done here in the States that speak to situations just like that, where traffickers have posed as people that these children are related to or have some kind of a connection to. Oh, yes, I'm your dad's uncle,
sure.
and we've never met before, but mm-hmm. I'd love for you to stay with me. And so that is absolutely a concern for us as well.
I never did think about that one. That was a good one, because I guess a child could be vulnerable like that, especially when someone is, as an adult, walks up and tell that person, I'm your uncle, you know, mm-hmm. come and stay with mm-hmm. me. And then the person is being, get into a position to be abused. And I can imagine that's pretty traumatic for a child.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. One of the other questions I wanted to ask you, how did you and what made you get into this type of organization? What motivated you to get into this organization?
So a couple of things. So from a professional standpoint, my background is in domestic violence advocacy. And so some of the organizations that I mentioned previously, I have been actively a part of in my professional career. So when this idea of what can we do to address trafficking was posed to me as a member of one of these organizations, I was like, oh my gosh, what is trafficking? I hadn't even really heard of it or understood all of the nuances around it. And so that was kind of my first exposure to it, mm-hmm. was kind of indirectly through that. On a personal level, many times I've thought about my own role in addressing some real serious and terrifying public health issues. And I think back about my experience in grade school and middle school and hearing about slavery and hearing about the horrific things that were happening in the United States, the Holocaust, for example, not that that was happening in the United States, but thinking about it from if I was alive in that time, what side of history would I be on? And for me, this is a very clear example of something that is horrendous and happening in our own backyards. And I want to be on the side of history that is creating a safer place for my child, for my grandchildren, for my great-grandchildren. Thank you. Like I said, it was definitely serendipitous in a lot of ways, but mm-hmm. you know, I think that's a legacy that I can be proud of.
Sure. And one of the things that I was looking at, and I was looking on the website, and it says a minor child is no such thing as a child prostitute. Why was that statement made? And could a child become a prostitute? Or that's impossible?
So under the federal statute, a child who engages in a commercial sex act, it's automatically a trafficking situation.
Mm-hmm.
So the concept of a child prostitute really speaks to the verbiage around consent. If I am engaged in sex work, there is an element of consent
mm-hmm.
Within that, if that makes sense. As opposed
sure.
to being trafficked, a child under the age of 18 cannot give consent to a sexual act that involves some kind of exchange. And so that's why that speaks to that.
Thank you, Becky. Spillman, that has been my guest on KKFI 90.1. That's what you've been listening to, Kansas City. And real quickly, could you give any information out, website, to our listeners, because we're at the bottom of our hour?
Absolutely. So really quickly, if you or someone that you know, if you have any concerns or someone that you know is experiencing trafficking or just want to talk with someone about that possibility, the National Human Trafficking Hotline is 1-888-373-7888. Again, that number is 1-888-373-7888, and there are advocates available 24/7 to talk with you. If you're interested in learning more about LATTE and the work that we're doing, feel free to visit our website at www.latteassociation.org.
Spell that LATTE, and then we'll close out.
Absolutely. www.latteassociation.org.
Thank you, Becky, for being my guest here on KKFI 90.1, Jaws of Justice. Have a great day.
Now the calendar for the week of July 16th. Mama on a Mission has started Survivors Unite, a new group uniting the surviving families who have lost a loved one to violent crime. They understand that grief is experienced in different stages and help families heal and learn to properly release their emotions. Survivors Unite meets every third Monday of the month and will meet today, July 16th, 7 p.m. at Margaret's Place, 7217 Troost, KCMO. The Lee Summit chapter of Moms Demand Action will be held Thursday, July 19th, 9:30 a.m. at Lowenstein Park, Shelter 1, 2050 Northwest Lowenstein Drive, Lee's Summit, Missouri. You are invited to help them work for common sense gun laws at the state and national level. The Casey Chapter of Mothers in Charge Healing Support Group will be meeting Thursday, July 19th from 5 to 7 p.m. at the Robert J. Mohart Multipurpose Center, Suite 124W, 3200 Wayne Avenue, KCMO. This group is for people who have lost loved ones to murder and violence. The first hour will be sharing of experiences, and in the second hour, therapists and others who can help navigate the emotional and legal terrain will be available. For more information, you can find them on the web at www.kcmothersincharge.org or call them at 816-912-2601. Corey's Network annual vigil to support the families of unsolved murders will be held 8 p.m. Sunday, July 29th at 3907 Cracker Neck Road, Independence, Missouri. They will be gathering in recognition of the fifth anniversary of Corey Lakovich's murder and families of unsolved murder victims for praying together, lighting candles, and lining 39th Street with the faces of loved ones still waiting for answers for their homicide victims. My name is Jamie, reminding you that these events and more can be found on the Jaws of Justice Radio Facebook page, as well as the Jaws of Justice Radio page on the KKFI website, kkfi.org. We want to thank our engineer today, Mike Murphy.
Good morning, I'm Jessica Thomas, and thank you for tuning in to KKFI 90.1 FM. Today we have been discussing the topics of trafficking of humans and women in particular, and joining me on the phone today to talk about their program that they're running with Native Hope is Kyle Middleton and his brother Kansas. Joining me, are you there, Kyle?
Yes, I'm right here along with my brother Kansas.
Awesome. How are you today?
We're doing great today. Just, you know, getting ready to start off this Monday bright and early and tackle some great objectives.
Yeah, you know, there's so much more to talking about Native Hope in your projects and things that we wanted to discuss today. not just with the trafficking, this came to you, but your group, Native Hope, traditionally works in productions and storytelling.
Yes, yes, we are. Yes, we're about, you know, our mission is to believe in the power of storytelling to dismantle barriers, bring healing, and inspire hope for Native people. And we believe a lot of the healing that comes along with that is telling your story and giving our people a voice. So,
and how did this bring about, this program that we are made aware of, about the trafficking of Indigenous women, though it's all of us?
Well, I'm gonna turn that over to my twin brother, Kansas Middleton, here, and that's his part of expertise, where he specializes in trauma, historical trauma for our people, and he's a really great advocate for missing and murdered indigenous women, and really takes the lead on a lot of the things that we do here with sex trafficking. So I just want to hand that over to him to answer real quick.
Hi, Kansas.
Hello. Would you re-ask the question, please?
I was asking him what led you as a group of storytellers, and it's clear that through storytelling we heal, but another organization was birthed, which is what we were talking about today, the trafficking of Indigenous women and the healing that can happen. And first of all, what are you guys calling the program? Do you have a name for it, or are you just a subsidiary under another program with Native Hope?
So that's the great thing about Native Hope is we know that, you know, we're stronger with more unity and bigger numbers. So one great thing at Native Hope that we also believe in is you know, we can't take this on by ourselves. So we partner with other great organizations such as Call to Freedom out of Sioux Falls. They're a sex trafficking organization. Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women out of Rapid City. We also work with the Artemis House Shelter out in Sturgis, and just, you know, various other organizations, the Wachoni Wawokia Center, Sacred Heart Center up in Eagle Butte, and you know, we do that. But the reason why we got into this work, the reason why I'm passionate about this as well as my brother and Native Hope, is because our Indigenous women, our Native women, you know, their voices is for a long time been underserved. You know, not only has the Indigenous voice as a people, but, you know, the women, you know, they take a, you know, I hate to say it like this, but they take a back seat. And so if a whole people's voice is being suppressed, then just can only imagine, you know, the silence that our women have to live in. And so that's why we're storytelling. That's why we're giving people the power to use their own voice as a tool to speak out against it, because, you know, sharing a story is definitely hard, but that's definitely the first part of healing, is being able to recognize that wound, that hurt, and doing something from it. But, you know, sharing the story with one another, we all heard a great story that, you know, inspired us, that maybe wanted us to be empowered to do something, you know, change our lives in some way or another. And in this avenue, we wanted to be able to, you know, help others that maybe this has happened to them and they don't know what to do. They can speak out. And also with our networking, with the different groups that we work with, and also the counselor, the, you know, other great organizations, we can give them other resources to help the healing process fully begin. And, you know, we just want people that tell the story to tell it, you know, in their own ways, and we don't, and their own time.
It's a complex issue, being many, many factors being involved, from, you know, and there's supply and demand, and what drives an individual to wish to possess another person. So you're going too deep. Roots of issues, and what would bring a person into a situation where they would be endangered to being trafficked. Another complex set of issues, which could go to, you know, addiction, alcoholism. Also, you know, what gets someone into a situation that has them trafficked or has them endangered where they're murdered. Unfortunately, it seems these aren't strangers, because they could be individuals that are in your lives that are walking in a path that is not true to light. And so in this complex set of issues, it's going to take an entire community to address it, from, you know, addiction recovery. Knowing where your people are, and knowing that you have people so that you are counted for. Say, we know where our family is. And even, I think, there is a sense of a loneliness when depression and addiction come into play that isolates humans. So on many levels, the healing has to start. I believe the storytelling process is one way that we can reach the heart very quickly. Also in sharing your story to not normalize, but to begin a dialogue. And you talk about missing, I mean, how many people do you know that this impacts? It impacts us all. What in your lives, how many do you see? Everyone is impacted. And what can we do? And where do we start? And I believe this starts with this dialogue.
Exactly. You know, just like you said, it's a hard issue to talk about. It's even a harder issue to, in a sense, if you want to dig in and get your hands a little dirty, because it's a dangerous job as well. But, you know, people have to do it. And one of the biggest issues is having a dialogue about it and raising awareness. You know, people want to know, you know, they question, what does awareness really do? And, you know, there's a lot of people that just don't know that are that all. There's a lot of people that are naive, that don't want to believe it. And one of the best things that storytelling also allows is it allows people to be empathetic for one another. It allows them feeling to be real. And the reason why my brother and myself are so passionate about this, and why we're not afraid to talk about this tough subject or to want to stand against it, is because, you know, we were raised by our grandmother and our mother. And, you know, we all have a grandmother. We all have a mother. We all came from a woman. And there should be, you know, not only as men, but as all people, to want to protect our mothers, want to protect our sisters, our aunties, our nieces, our daughters, all those that can give us life, and to make sure that we're still here. So, you know, all them things you talked about, it's tough. It's, you know, it's where do you start? But dialogue is a great way to start, asking questions. You know, just picking up the phone or even Googling some websites or organizations, and then just volunteering.
But there are specific, you want to talk about dangerous, okay? There are specific points of clearly, like around Great Lakes, where the shipping areas where women are being brought from reservation in Minnesota to, you know, this is a direct need and ask. That's happening. There's an area, there's a place. You know, something that that we had identified, a series of crimes, and I don't really guess I should probably talk details, where someone was literally hunted because of her apparent vulnerabilities, the alcoholism that was there. She was homeless and appeared homeless, though she was very loved. She was hunted and taken here in Missouri. And that's a thing. And I guess recognizing, you know, what's happening when someone is in distress. And, you know, I think as, you know, we get to a place of having to deal with emotion and really the true cause, when our everything we are as humans are established between the ages of 0 and 6 years old, how do we reintroduce an opportunity for someone to understand that you are cared about and loved, that would keep to stop such a thing from happening, to address it at the core level. Again, you say we all come from a woman, mother, and these things that would impact you personally. And how many, just say right now, how many women's names do you have on a list that are missing or murdered? I'm asking you. How many do you have on your personal list of missing or murdered women?
That are personally affected my life?
Yes. Or that your organization is working with? We had a series of... Go ahead. We had a series of murders during the 90s and early 2000s in Kansas City. And they were women that they just termed, prostitutes. But they weren't. They were women of a specific area that were being targeted, you know, for their vulnerabilities or their kindness. And that list, it was huge before they stopped this crime.
Yes. It's a tough one. With our organization, you know, we, I guess, we don't have an exact number of, you know, how many. Roughly, our ballpark is about, within the whole, you know, vicinity in our area, about 1,200 missing and murdered indigenous women.
That's not alarming to anyone? 1,200. You know,
right? Yeah, you know, and this is over a good span of years as well, you know, but they prey on the vulnerable reservation areas where, you know, you have what you spoke of, the poverty, the addiction, you know, if it's not necessarily the natives doing this to themselves, it's outsiders that are being predators and that are preying on all these different, you know, environmental disparities that people have to live in. And that's why, you know, Native Hope is so important, because we want to fix not only sex trafficking and address that issue, but we want to fix full holistic healing and on so many different levels. But, you know, today it's sex trafficking that we're talking about, and, you know, it's raising awareness, it's standing up, it's sharing how to recognize the signs, you know, and not turning away to always stand your ground. One thing I'd like to share with you is I know, you know, we're here in South Dakota, and you guys are a few states away, but, you know, on July 29th, we're going to be having a big statewide event here in Chamberlain, South Dakota, at the Dignity Statue. I don't know if you've ever heard of her, but if you get a chance, Google Dignity Statue in South Dakota, and we're going to be hosting a sex trafficking, human trafficking awareness event that's going to be highlighted. It's going to be on the 29th, just about a week away from the opening of the Sturgis Rally. And so we have various organizations coming in to collaborate with us. And the main trafficking source for transportation is I-90. And one of our things that we're going to be doing is all of our organizations together are going to be protecting I-90 for our women and children, for us to protect the sacred and warrior up and to stand our ground.
So you have so this is happening on July 29th. Can you quickly, because we have this wonderful thing of the modern communications, text me that link. I love hearing that. It's like automatic research, because I would love to, coordinate with all things. And, you know, this is what's very interesting, going forward in how we could cooperate. And I believe it will take all. I know we had talked about, you know, the new kind of infrastructure that's coming into America, which is charging stations, which are run off of software. So you could, and I did have had this lengthy discussion, because I attended a conference at the American Renewable Energy Conference, and there was a discussion about software that could be implemented, because, of course, traffickers themselves they have to stop and fuel their vehicles or eat and relieve themselves. And these would be in park areas and truck stops and all the areas that the charging stations would be, and the software could be implemented in a way that would allow people to safely, you know, report that they may have findings or some way for someone who is, you know, lost or on the road to check in, to let their people know that they are all right. But first, it's all is having people and having that support system. So you're involved in this every day and on many, many different projects I saw with Native Hope and the storytelling projects. Is this going to be something that you're going to produce for release as well?
We're hoping to try to get the event, but if not, if we can't produce it, then in the near future we'll be hosting another event to try to get it. But this is definitely one way in the works of trying to get our media team to help create some kind of visual for it, just to show the unity amongst us here in South Dakota, but to show, you know, the efforts that we're all doing, the coalition amongst all the organizations, not to say, you know, who's better than who, but to show the support we have for one another to really, truly, compassionately end it for our women and children, and to speak volumes and stand up for them. But we also have other videos and different things in production that we'd love to share with you to help promote and to be able to collaborate and partner with you to help your idea as well as ours. You know, great organizations coming together to just do great things.
Did you send me that link?
Oh, no, not yet. I'm sorry.
It's all right.
I'll send it right after this conversation.
Right on. So, cause the thing about radio being, we have to really keep the conversation lively and enlightening for people to, you know, keep them here with us.
Yep.
And I'm like, I'm like, okay, let me check that out. But
the link right now, we have shared the event on Facebook, and we're working on a Even Bright event page that we're going to be launching by the end of today. So once that link is available to share, I'll be sending it to you as soon as possible. But we're live on social media, and it's active right there through our event page on that. And as soon as we get that going and the link will be ready on Eventbrite, like I said, we'll be able to send it to you and be able to send it out so everybody can be able to see if they want to be interested in a great event that's going to spread awareness and...
So how does that, around the time, because I know that there are a lot of people that go through, you know, in summertime, the travel, because South Dakota itself is not super hospitable in the winter. So that's like, so there's a lot of people that spend time coming through during the summer. And could you recommend places that they could come to visit to see some of your projects?
Definitely here in Chamberlain, you'd be able to, our home base is in Chamberlain, South Dakota, right along the Missouri River. And our headquarters is really nice if you wanted to come in and look at all our projects. You stop in our office, come hang out with us, and you come and set up that time with us. You contact, you know, I would be able to share some contact information after this, but, you know, you set it up in advance. We actually would be able to take you to our reservation, our home reservation, and show you the hands-on work, the groundwork that we do. You'd just be able to come spend a day with us, get to know us a little better, know what our organization is truly about, and you'd be able to, you know, volunteer for the day in a sense and do whatever you're comfortable with doing. But, you know, you'd be able to have a different experience that I can guarantee not many people have ever got experience before.
Yeah, absolutely. And so tell me some more about what's going on the 29th so we can help you with getting connected here.
So on the 29th, we're going to have this event, and I didn't tell you what the name is. We're going to be having the event called Bringing Dignity to Women. The event will show South Dakota's united effort to raise awareness and educate others against human trafficking, sex trafficking, and domestic violence, while also showing the support to our South Dakota women and children. The event is free to the public. You don't need any tickets or passes to be a part of it. You just show up on July 29th at 6 o'clock is when it begins. I'd recommend maybe 5:30. Come show up, show your support. If possible, wear a red T-shirt and, you know, just come hang out. We're going to have a various numbers of speakers. from various organizations. It'll be a two-hour event, and once you get done, we're going to have some wojapi, some fried bread, and some wahampi, some soup, to be able to kind of send those in attendance home on the, with a little bit of food in their stomach or something.
Nice. I need to remind everybody that, you know, who we've been talking to, because we have actually gone through our allotted time, and they're going to want to get into, yeah, we're going to want to get into some other things here on the radio station. But I appreciate you joining me. I've been speaking with Kyle in Kansas,
yep,
Middleton. You are with Native Hope. And would you please give us any information? Did you see how quickly I got in here on my little Facebook thing, went over there and said, hey, thanks for joining me today. That's how fast we can communicate now and make things happen. And I think with the speed of sound.
Yeah.
Yes, we do have your website on our Facebook page. And I just went in there and friended you and said, hey, but please give them your website address. And
yes, our website address, you can find us at www.nativehope.org. And you can find us on all social sites. We're on Facebook, we're on Twitter, and Instagram. On Facebook, we're Native Hope. On Instagram and Twitter, we're Project Native Hope. And, you know, we have sex trafficking isn't the only pillar that we run off and operate here. You know, we have several other programs, such as youth programming and, you know, as youth programs and other different things that go on in the organization. So we do a lot of underground work in the reservations that we work in directly. So, you know, we're really active in a lot of different things. If anybody wants to go in and support us and subscribe to our blog, to our videos.
You know we will.
Yep, and we do a lot of things going on here. We have a really small team at the moment, but we're all key players in everything we do. We're a great team to lean on, and I just recommend, you know, there's a lot of good things that my brother and I do on the website, such as fatherhood videos, you know, and just working with the next generation and, you know, giving Native American youth a...
Thank you so much, darling. We got to go. So I want to thank you so much for joining me today. I'm Jessica Thomas for KKFI 90.1 FM.
It's the 420 Drug War News, and this is part 4 of a Drug Truth Network editorial wherein I claim the moral high ground in the drug war and list the reasons why it should be so. I say legalize and fear not. I submit that legalization will require a simple governmental control similar to the 1906 Pure Food and Drug Act, which required manufacturers to label their product with the exact content and percentages of what was contained therein. We should also provide warnings of danger, dosage recommendations, and links to medical help and treatment facilities. Products should be tested by the government to ascertain the contents before being sold to the public. Then it's buyer beware, adult buyer beware. We'll have lots of room in prison to hold anybody who would dare sell to our children. Daily costs should be set to be similar to a pack of cigarettes. Costly, but not enough to lead the user to commit a crime to support their habit. Barbarous cartels would immediately begin losing tens of billions of dollars in profits from selling drugs to our children, and would thus lose their eternal seed money with which they fund other criminal enterprises. Cartels would begin losing influence and power when Bata o Plomo loses most of its power to corrupt as the black market in drugs is eliminated. The number of refugees fleeing to the U.S. would quickly drop as well as the power of the cartel billions begins to disappear. Over a period of just a few months, most of the harms of the drug war will disappear forever. Terrorists will no longer turn cannabis and opium flowers into weapons via the black market. Violent U.S. gangs will lose $30 to $40 billion a year, and will have little hope of continuing to attract America's children to lives of crime or addiction. When a dose of pure drugs is available at the drugstore for a few dollars, the snake oil salesman will all but disappear. Once products of known quality are on the druggist's shelf, overdose deaths will soon be only those committing suicide. Will there still be horrible accidents, lives forever altered, families fractured, and children getting in trouble, even dying? Certainly, but we must stop and realize we have that situation now. It is exponentially compounded by confusion, secrecy, and paranoia. The list of complications is huge. We cannot ignore what is before our eyes. The United States, land of the free, is now the world's leading jailer, imprisoning more of our citizens, and not even just per capita, but as for any nation of any size for all time. We are the champions of the world. You can hear the full editorial on the July 5th edition of Cultural Baggage. I am Dean at drugtruth.net.
We hope you enjoyed today's show and that we leave you with something to think about, something to talk to your neighbors about, and a reason to get involved. As always, the opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests of Jaws of Justice Radio, not of KKFI, the Midcoast Radio Project Incorporated, its staff, or volunteers. You can find our calendar of events and a link to our show on the Jaws of Justice Radio Facebook page. You can always listen to us live and find our podcasts on the KKFI website, kkfi.org. If you have a show idea or want to help produce the show, email us at jawsofjusticeradio@yahoo.com. This is Jamie reminding you our outro music is Better Man from the Playing for Change CD. Please tune in for the rest of our 9 a.m. weekday lineup with Law and Disorder on Tuesday, Alternative Radio on Wednesday, Cowtown Conversations on Thursday, and Between the Lines at 9 a.m., followed by Bioneers at 9:30 a.m. on Fridays. Up next is Monday Morning Medicine Show with Dr. Mike, and at noon, Arts Magazine with Michael Hoag. Stick around for Jazz and Blues in the afternoon and Eco Radio KC at 6 p.m. Then round out your day south of the border with Fiesta Musical, Compartiendo Familia, and Compartiendo en Noche.